You're listening to Gameplay with Matthew Cause on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the third and final hour of Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause, and so excited for tonight's Raptors game. They've won six in a row, but they've beaten either bad teams or depleted teams. They will be facing neither of those tonight as they take on the Phoenix Suns. And join me now to talk all things Phoenix and covers the team. It is Dave King, writer for Brightside Sun with SB Nation podcast, The Suns Solar Panel. That's a good name, by the way. I always have a good podcast name. It is Dave King. Dave, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to just start here and just talk about the team. How different is this team versus the one that made it to game six of the finals last year? And is this a better version of the Phoenix Suns than the last one we saw in the playoffs?
So theoretically, it's a better version. Like today, maybe not. But theoretically, the team has been put together to be a better version of last year, shoring up some of the few weaknesses that were exposed by the Bucks in the finals, which was lack of depth at center, like size, yeah, after Dario Saric had gone down, and pace of play. Like, they didn't have a way to get easy points when a team would come up with a very, very good defensive scheme to cut off the mid-range shots that the Suns were living on all year. So the Suns shored up those things. They're playing at the fourth highest pace or so in the league this year, which is faster than any Chris Paul team has ever played at. And they're getting their easy shots, and they've got a lot of depth now at center. The question is now, is some other team going to bring some other thing that they can't contend with the next round of the playoffs? You just don't know until you're there. But theoretically, this team is better than they were a year ago, yes.
And by the way, you know, the problems that were exposed, here's one thing. If Giannis goes 17 of 19 from the free throw line, most teams are going to lose. You mentioned something that I'm curious about. And listen, I know whenever someone talks to the Phoenix Suns that doesn't watch them every night, we just automatically do the same thing. Well, can Chris Paul stay healthy? And I'm sure you've had to answer that question 1,000 times from 1,000 different versions of me. So I'll ask it in a kind of a different way. You mentioned this pace of play. Is Chris Paul going to be able to handle this if you're, as you just said, this is the highest pace of play he's ever done, and he's not exactly a spring chicken?
Yeah, the pace of play is actually a community, you know, composite effort. Devin Booker's pushing the ball in transition, and other guys are too. I don't think this year is having any more wear and tear on Chris Paul than any prior year. He's shown in the last two regular seasons that he can play all the way through and make it to the playoffs. He got frustrated in this last playoffs because he was in and out of the lineup all playoffs. He had the shoulder issue, and then he had COVID, and then he had a wrist thing. And so I'm sure he's trying to actually conserve more energy this season during the regular season than he did last year. So, no, he's not getting any more wear and tear with the pace of play. He's actually taking fewer shots than he ever has in 10 years in a game. He's just doing a little bit less, although he's been extremely productive, right? He's leading the league in assists, and he might he'll be an all-star probably again next month. But no, I don't think this pace of play is going to wear him down. He's just getting older, and so it's always a crapshoot, hoping he stays healthy, but you just don't know.
Joined by Dave King, who covers the Phoenix Suns. And yeah, in the end, part of that is you just don't know. With Chris Paul, it's like anyone. You get older, and injuries happen sometimes when you're not expecting them. The one other storyline that was interesting was DeAndre Ayton doesn't get, you know, some of that max contract extension, and then we're wondering, it's like, oh, cheap Robert Sarver, and will this be a distraction, and could this impact his play? I'm curious, what has been the state of all things Ayton when it comes to two things, his play on the court and any conversation about contracts?
Yeah, it's turned out that after his initial disappointment and frustration before real games started, it's turned out to have a zero impact on him. He's a Bahamian, born and bred. And what that means is, you know what, you just chill out. Everything is great. Everything's fine. It's going to all work out. He's one of the most talented players in the NBA. He's going to get his money at some point. He couldn't make any of the money until next year anyway. So he's just basically said, you know what, I'm just going to have fun and play this year. And then we'll figure out contracts again next year. And someone, you know, someone is going to give him the money. And almost certainly the Suns are going to keep him and at the worst match somebody else's max offer. So he's taking it like you would hope a guy would take it who had an impasse on his contract. He's like, hey, I'm just having fun. I just want to win games.
Who's the best player on the Phoenix Suns?
That's a good. I'd have to say, it's a toss up for different reasons between Chris Paul
yeah.
and Devin Booker. So Chris Paul is like he is the guy who stirs the drink. He's the guy who makes the Suns as good as they are. And so you'd have to call him the reason he finished fifth in MVP voting last year, and made the All Star game voted in by the coaches because he is that guy. However, you don't win as many games without Devin Booker there as your running mate. And Devin Booker is arguably got certainly has a brighter future than Chris Paul. And he's arguably better right now and more important for a finals win. I mean, the guy just set a record for most points in the debut playoffs. And there's been a lot of guys in the history of the league
yeah.
who've made it all the way to the finals in their first playoff run. So it's just crazy.
It is, and it's the impressive thing about Phoenix is you can argue those two guys, and you also, I think there's like seven, maybe eight members of the team that are all scoring in double digits, so there's a ton of depth all over the place, and I don't know how you view it in terms of who's the best team. I know Phoenix right now is tied with Golden State, but I don't know how much I can trust Klay Thompson, who hasn't played in a couple years. And Andrew Wiggins is a nice story, but you know, there's little red flags. Like I right now would have Phoenix over the Golden State Warriors. I'm curious, as somebody who watches more Western Conference basketball than I do, Dave, how you rank it.
That's a really, really, really good question, and it's impossible to answer. But I would obviously, as a Suns homer, I'm going to say, look, here's the deal. The Suns have the best combination of offense and defense. They're second in the league in defense, and they have a top 10 offense. The Warriors have a little bit less of an efficient of an offense, and a little bit better defense. So the Suns have the best balance in the West. Utah has a better offense, but a much worse defense. So if you're looking for balance, if you're looking for, as the Suns proved all the way in last year's playoffs, getting to the finals, and as you mentioned, only getting beaten by one of the game's probably top five ever most talented players, having his best basketball of his entire life. That's the only way you beat Phoenix. They're pretty unbeatable and tough to beat in the playoffs because they have such a great offense and defense, and the offense they play is really hard to shut down because they have eight guys scoring in double figures, and teams just don't do that.
No, oh no, they don't. It's a remarkable roster construction. Dave, I will leave you with this question again. Talking to Dave King, who covers the Suns with SB Nation, Bright Side, and also the podcast Suns Solar Panel. Are the Raptors going to see a fully healthy and just completely back from any protocols Phoenix Suns team tonight?
Not entirely healthy, but definitely mostly there, right? So all the starters are there, and the primary bench people, except Cameron Johnson, rolled an ankle at the very end of the last game, and so he's sitting out at least this game, if not for a little longer. He's their key reserve off the bench. He had a high this year, 22 straight games of 2+3s made, most of anybody in the NBA. So he's out. But everybody else is there. They're just trying to recover from COVID. And, you know, you guys know you've had your own COVID issues over the last year and a half. It's tough when you first come back. Like most of the starting lineup is just now coming back from COVID. So you might not see the very best of the Suns tonight in Toronto.
Well, it's going to be a hell of a game. And I just can't wait because to me, and it's a compliment to Phoenix that for us around here, we want to see how Toronto measures up against one of the best. So that's what makes tonight's game so much fun. Dave, really appreciate. Follow him on Twitter at DaveKingNBA, a remarkably easy Twitter account to be able to spell on your own, especially with no underscore anywhere. Dave, really appreciate.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Take care. There's Dave King, covers the Suns for SB Nation. All right. On the other side, we haven't even mentioned it. And bad on me. Forgot to promote it. It is our Tuesday Top 5. And our Tuesday Top 5 comes from where, Producer Austin? Where does it come from today?
This Top 5 comes from my brother, Spencer Mackey, who, watching the national championship yesterday, said, hey, what are the best ties ever in sports history? And I had no idea.
And we are going to do our Tuesday Top 5 is our Top 5 ties. And I'm going to throw you a couple curveballs, but I feel pretty good about it. That is coming up in a moment. You're going to want to listen to that. But first, time now for News Talk 1010. Traffic update.
This is Gameplay on TSN 1050.
Double or nothing.
Done.
Witness.
We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
It's King Kong Bundy always looking for that big five count.
Five.
Now he wants the five. And the referee obliges him. Give me a break, ref.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. We do it each and every Tuesday. It is our Tuesday Top 5. And before we get into it, you're too young for this, but you'll never know, Austin, the joy that was King Kong Bundy.
Oh, man, I'm a wrestling historian. Of course I know King Kong Bundy. WrestleMania 2, Vince Hulk Hogan in the steel cage. Come on now.
That's right. But
I love my
but
wrestling.
Where were you when, what was the match that led up to Hogan taking on King Kong Bundy?
Hogan breaks his back, right? So he has to go away somewhere, and Bobby Heenan brings... I can't remember. You got me there. You got me there.
It was Hogan taking on the magnificent Morocco. And who comes into the ring to screw things up? That's who it was. It was a match against the magnificent Morocco.
Awesome. Good to know. Number five, Matt.
Number five. Wait. We haven't told it yet. In honor of the national championship, Austin's brother was the one who came up with this idea. Our Tuesday Top 5. It is Top 5 ties of all time in honor of the Sunday Nighter, where we're all rooting. First time ever that collectively a fan base was rooting for a tie in the game.
Absolutely. The Top 5 ties in sports. My number 5, Matt, I'm going to go to 1981, and it's a movie. The Germany is playing the Allies. The Allies are down 4-1 at halftime. They storm back, tie the game 4-4 despite a crooked rest. Yes, I am telling you the plot from Victory, the 1981 World War II movie, where the Allies tied the Germans 4-4, escaping the POW camp and making it to freedom. That was one heck of a tie.
It was. I was thinking about that one as well. And I think, wasn't Sylvester Stallone? I'm trying to remember that.
He's playing keeper. Yeah.
Yeah. Sylvester Stallone was in it. And I'm trying to remember. Like, I'm pulling it up here because it's been so long. Yeah, Michael Caine. That's right.
Michael Caine. Yeah, absolutely.
And Pele was in the movie as well.
Yeah. He really got together in the second half. I don't know what happened to him in the first half.
Yeah, it was, tale of two halves. So that is yours. Interesting. I also am going with a tie. And I know some people are a movie tie. And I know some people are going to quibble with me. But there wasn't a winner or a loser. The referee did not raise up the arm of either Apollo Creed or Rocky Balboa. It was a split decision, technically not a tie, but in my books, that is a tie. I'm going with the original Rocky. That one best picture is my number 5.
Ain't gonna be no rematch.
Oh, look at you.
My number 4.
Yeah.
This one is special place in my heart because it's one of the funniest moments of my sports fandom. It's when Donovan McNabb tied the Bengals 13-13 in 2008, and he gave us the piece of sound that lives forever. Not knowing that the NFL had ties. Not knowing the rules in the game. I love Don McNabb. I hate that quote, but it is hilarious. That tie, I will never forget it just because of that quote.
It was. It was a great one, and it happens every couple years. NFL game ends in tie. NFL, usually a rookie. Like McNabb, you're the quarterback. You got to know that. All right, my number 4, and all of these are games that I have also watched. My number 4, bitter rival, lots of scoring, and it has a nickname. It's called Choke at Doak. and that is Doak Campbell Stadium, where the Florida State Seminoles play college football. In 1994, the Florida Gators, led by future Heisman Trophy winner Danny Werfel, they are up 31-3, and they are facing off against Danny Cannell and Florida State. And also, Florida was ranked fourth in the nation. Florida State was ranked seventh. So this is two top 10 teams battling out, bitter rivals. And the Seminoles scored 28 points in the fourth quarter. It tied the NCAA record for biggest fourth quarter comeback. 28 points in the fourth quarter. Florida State, Florida, tying at 31, denying Florida any chance of making it to a title game.
Yeah, that's Bobby Bowden's first year at FSU too, right? He's kind of cemented his
Bowden
legacy and kept it going.
Yeah, Bowden versus Steve Spurrier. Oh, those were good days at college football.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My number three, Matt, it's the 2002 MLB All-Star Game, tie-in at 7-7 in the 11th inning because both teams ran out of pitchers. There's no tie-in in baseball. This actually led to the All-Star Game deciding home field advantage in the World Series for, I think, 15 years after this. So this had a consequential effect on the game of baseball, and it's one of the more historical ties in the history of sports.
We will get back to that in a moment. Spoiler, I will add to that. My number three, a game that almost no one will remember, but it had a famous moment when Washington, the Washington football team, they lost their quarterback, Gus Frerotte, to a sprained neck. Why? Because after scoring a touchdown late in the first half, he banged his head into the stadium wall celebrating his touchdown run. His night was done. Jeff Hostetler, the former New York Giant, comes in, but it doesn't matter. Giants in Washington, 7-7 tie on a horrible Thursday night game, and Washington had four turnovers, couldn't run the ball. But the reason this is thrown in, and you'll see it on TSN's top 10 list of just top 10 boneheaded celebrations or injuries, was Gus Frerotte spraining his neck. That's my number three.
Is that where that clip is from, where I see on
yes.
every top 10?
Yes.
Yeah, that's one
that
of the funniest.
From.
That's one of the funniest ones of all time, and that
yeah.
that always, always kills me. My number two, Matt, I don't always agree with his opinions, but I absolutely love his ties. It's Don Cherry, the man who's best dressed in Canadian media, I think, for better or worse. He's not on TV anymore, but his ties will always be in my mind, and I'll always think of that man for his sense of fashion. Don Cherry's
love
ties,
it.
Number two.
I love it. You know what's funny about both our lists? You did the movie for number five, and you did the curveball for number two,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, well, I liked his ties better than the allies escaping, and now that I'm saying that, I kind of regret it. But yeah, that's how I ranked it.
Someone's going to be texting.
It's not
trying to get you canceled.
It's not a real
something.
Movie. It's a fake movie. Never actually happened.
So you like Don Cherry more than the allies?
Nope. Not what I said. Not what I said.
That's okay. All right. Just make sure you include that for the podcast, the podcast description. And Austin's been fun working with you. Oh, Twitter's angry. My number two is also my curveball. I don't remember one NHL tie that sticks out. So shout out to the NHL goalie with the most career ties at 172, Terry Sawchuk, getting it done. That's my number two, Terry Sawchuk, for the most career ties by an NHL goalie.
That's an awesome one. I'm actually going to the ice.
And it's never
going to
be broken. By the way, we talk about records that are never broken. There aren't any ties in the NHL anymore. Terry Sawchuk can sit back and go, suck it. No one's beating my record.
He can pop that bottle of champagne every year from here on out.
Exactly.
My number one, though, Matt, is a hockey game. And it's what some call the greatest hockey game ever played on a club level. It's the 1975 Montreal Canadiens versus KSK Moscow team.
Yep.
Both teams absolutely stacked with Hall of Famers and legends that you remember. Tretiak in net for Moscow. That game ended 3-3, and both players from both sides have talked about it and said that it is probably the greatest club game ever played in the history of hockey. I wasn't around to see it. I'll take their word for it. That's my number one tie of all time. KSK Moscow versus Montreal Canadiens, Montreal form, 1975.
You see it all over the place, and that's why that you see that game is mentioned all the time on these lists. All right, my number one, you mentioned it. July 9th, 2002, Bud Selig is huddled together with Joe Torre and Bob Brenly. The problem is Both teams used every pitcher for like a single inning. They had no one left in the 11 innings. The crowd is throwing beer bottles on the field at the commissioner in his hometown of Milwaukee. The crowd is chanting, let him play, refund, Bud must go. Oh, it was an absolute delight. It was total chaos. And yes, it meant it changed the way All-Star games are played, more home field advantage. But also, here's another bad part. That tie meant there was no MVP was selected for the All-Star game, which is even worse because they had just renamed the award after Ted Williams, who had died a week before the game. They were planning on honoring the splendid splitter, Ted Williams, and instead no one gets honored. Ted Williams doesn't get honored. Beer bottles from over 41,000 fans litter Miller Park in Milwaukee. It was a delightful night.
Wow, that is
our top five.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's a really
it's funny.
So I wasn't totally paying attention to that one. What was the reaction of the average? Was it like what Bud Selig, get out. Like Bud Selig, what are you doing to our sport here?
Well, no one liked Bud Selig anyway, so it doesn't take much to get fan uproar against Bud. So when that happened, it was total chaos.
That Ted Everyone Williams wrinkle adds so much to it. I had no idea.
Well, that's why when you had that as your number three, I'm like, nope, I'm going to hold back because I know you're not going to get all the info, and I'll at least be able to color in that picture a little bit more. But good list. And I love the fact we both had a movie at five and a curveball at number two. And yes, for the first time ever, a broadcaster has said they choose Don Cherry over the Allies defeating.
I prefer Don Cherry's ties over the tie in victory is the exact quote. Let's not misquote it. Thank you, Matt.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I love our next guest, Michael Lombardi, who worked for years and years with Bill Belichick in the New England Patriots organization and is now working for VSiN. We're just going to spin the wheel of topics. And I mean from coaches that are in, coaches out, what the hell's going on with the Giants? What do you do with Baker Mayfield from the perspective from a former NFL executive? This is going to be a fun conversation. That's coming up in a moment, but first, traffic. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay, and I'm going to start this interview with Mike Lombardi, former general manager, won the Super Bowl three times as an NFL executive and the host of the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network, the first 24/7 broadcast network dedicated exclusively to sports betting. We have Sean King on the show all the time, and now we're joined by a guy I always love when he makes time to join us. It is Mike Lombardi, and Mike, I want to start with an apology. I think last time you came on, we started with Jungle Land. We were going to do some Bon Jovi. My producer forgot. He will be fired. Do you have a song you would like to hear at the end of this interview?
Oh, you know, I think, when you come to John, I think it's Living on a Prayer. I think you got to go with that. That's one of his classics. But, I mean, he's tremendous. We just named one of the rest stops on the Garden State Parkway. It's been named after him, which is awesome.
Cool. All right. Well, first off, we will have Living on a Prayer. And by the way, a hacky radio host would use that line to segue into a variety of NFL coaches getting fired questions. But I want to start here with you. How much damage is it to a franchise when they hire a bad GM? And I know all these teams are looking for the next savior head coach, but I'm a Giants fan. I've seen the damage done by David Gettleman. How much damage, like, you have a bad GM for 3-4 years. How long can that take the next group to fix?
Well, I mean, I think in the Giants' case, it's unique. I mean, you can throw Gettleman off the boat, but the problems aren't going to go away. Let me just give you a little bit of history about your New York football Giants. From 1974 to 1978 was the worst era in Giant football. It ended in November of 1978 when the Giants were leading the 6-5 Eagles. They were 5-6.
Yeah.
And Joe Pisarcik turned and pivoted to hand the ball off to Larry Zonka. He fumbled. Herman Edwards picked it up, and the rest is history. We call it the miracle of the Meadowlands. That was the intervention the Giants needed to change. at that moment, the commissioner got involved and they appointed really basically George Young to run the team and run the franchise and remove the ownership group. Well, we haven't had that intervention. Perhaps that Joe Judge's decision to run two quarterback sneaks on second and third down backed up might be the right intervention. But I don't think getting a new general manager is going to solve the Giants' problems. And to finalize this historical lesson is these past 5 years, their one-loss record is 27% lower than what it was in the worst five in their history.
So then all we need to do is hire Ray Perkins, then Bill Parcells, get Lawrence Taylor, get Phil Sims, have Bill Belichick as the defensive coordinator, have a good backup in Jeff Hostetler, and then we'll be good from 1981 to 1990, and the Giants can redo that again, right?
I think that's a really good plan. I mean, I think it's going to take some organization. What you just described there, really, is you're making fun of it, but what you just described is an organizational makeover.
Yeah,
and
it is.
That's what they need. And that's what they need. And because John Mara is the owner of the team and runs the team, I mean, Gettleman is they had this term in The Sopranos when they call him the sacrifice bun. I mean, he's the sacrifice bun. They're going to sacrifice him, you know, and it's not really his fault. It is his fault, but it's not. But why did they hire Gettleman? That's the question everybody should ask. Not why, how bad is Gettleman? Why they hired Gettleman? Because he was part of their culture. He was part of doing what they've always done. And until they're willing to change, that won't happen.
Until then, I'm just going to go back to YouTube clips of the Giants twice beating the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
You can watch the entire game is on YouTube if you care to.
I'd rather not. I think I'm just going to watch Lawrence Taylor sacking Ron Jaworski. I think I'll if I'm going to do Giants and Philly from the old days, I'm going to stick there. We are joined by Mike Lombardi. And so I just want to sort of spin the wheel of topics with you because you're always good on all this kind of stuff. You're Cleveland. What do you do with Baker Mayfield?
I think you hang on to him. You do exactly what they're doing. You say he's our starter for next year, and then you go out there and you start looking for somebody to replace him. I mean, that's just what you're not going to be able to replace. He's really cheap on your cap. He's not costing you a lot to keep him. So why not just keep him? You know, and plan your off season as him as an asset. And if you get the opportunity to trade him or to upgrade him, then go ahead. But right now, you know, you've made the playoffs with him. Before,
yep.
Right? And so there's no sense of urgency. Like, there's no sense in tearing down the house until you know you got another house.
Yeah, now you're right. And as I said, at that money, it's not a tremendous amount. Keeping on, to me, the one that feels like it gets talked about last offseason, I think it'll get talked about this offseason. I don't see any way Russell Wilson is traded. The grass is not always greener on the other side. Also, Pete Carroll at that age is not, I don't think he's going to want to do a full rebuild. I think at the start of next year, Russell Wilson is a Seahawk. That's my prediction. I'm curious about yours.
I think you're right. I think this is a media-driven story. I think they just won't let it go.
Yeah,
I think, you know, it's been put out there that he wants to get traded. He denies it. He says no, but you know, for clicks and for all the things that they want, it's staying alive. And I'm not sure it's the right thing. I think it's actually the wrong thing. I don't think he wants to get traded. And who and why would they see? Nobody fills in the sentences, right? You trade Russell Wilson. Who's replacing him for Seattle? They don't have a first round pick this year or next year. How do they replace him? What are they going to do? Are they bewitched and they're going to click their fingers and a quarterback's going to show up? I mean, seriously, like, how do you do this?
I wondered, by the way, Mike, do you think my producer got that reference?
No chance.
None at all.
But
none
it's okay.
at.
It's okay.
It's good. Okay. I got it. I loved it.
He can't get John Bon Jovi right. So, you know, I mean, we'll see.
By the way, I'm the one who
calls me and wants me to work for him. I mean, I don't understand it.
I don't either. As I told you, Austin will be fired at the end of the show today. On a more serious note, again, joined by Mike Lombardi, former GM in the NFL, part of three Super Bowls as an executive, and check out his work with VEASAN, the Lombardi line. How many GMs and owners, how many around the NFL, they're just waiting to see what the end game legally is with Deshaun Watson?
I think any team that has a quarterback issue is waiting for that. I think it's probably name the teams. Cleveland, you know, name all the teams that yeah. don't like their quarterback. Miami, yeah. Cleveland, Washington, name them all. I mean, they're all going to be in it.
Yeah, it's
and now, what happens now is because they've waited, now every pick in the draft is quantified. So if you trade Miami wanted to trade their first-round pick, you know exactly what it is. If they wanted to do it before the draft, you didn't know what it was. Before the end of the season, you were guessing on what it was. You know, if Miami would have traded them in October, you'd think, oh, boy, I got a top-five pick. But it ended up being you don't. So this now benefits them.
Yeah, and God, it's to me, everything is waiting on Deshaun, is waiting on just what happens there. Then it becomes a football conversation. It's a morality conversation. It's a second chance one, and it just becomes, I mean, you could do 4 hours just on that. I'm wondering, the impact on a team when you have an older owner who hasn't won, and I'm thinking of Stephen Ross in Miami, who, you know, got rid of Brian Flores, and not the same thing, but like Jerry Jones, and everything's good right now in Dallas, but hasn't won since Barry Switzer. As a guy who's been in the NFL for so long, how much of a difference does it make if you got an owner who's a little bit older who hasn't done any winning?
Oh, I think it makes a huge, all of them want. The two things owners want, they want to win a Super Bowl and they want to get in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's the two things the owners want more than anything. And you're seeing more owners one can run their teams before. I mean, look, Stephen Ross runs that team as much as anything, even though he's in New York. I mean, he's involved in all the decisions. I'm not saying he's making the decisions. He's just he knows the decisions. So, and he said this summer, which was a catch-all line, that, hey, I expect to go to the Super Bowl soon. And he thinks his team's ready to compete. And I think ultimately what most owners fail to acknowledge and understand is expectations are the killer. You know, they expect to. I mean, he has an opinion of where Tua is as a player. And I don't think that's the real deal.
Yeah, and choosing the general manager over the coach, I don't know, just seemed weird, Brian Flores getting fired, considering the amount of wins he was able to put up with that roster. More remarkable for you, Mike Lombardi, the Steelers somehow getting in, or the Saints going 9-8 with four different quarterbacks, no Michael Thomas, and Alvin Kamara in and out of the lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of Sean's greatest coaching jobs, right? I think it's really good, and so I just think it's remarkable. I don't think it gets enough credit. Him and Mike Tomlin, to me, deserve a standing ovation for what they've accomplished this year.
And is the exact opposite of that Brandon Staley and the Los Angeles Chargers?
You know, I think Staley gets way too much, you know, love for going for it on fourth down. If you examine this Charger team defensively, it's one of the worst defensive teams. It's one of the worst defensive teams in the league. They actually got worse from their defense last year to this year. They fired Anthony Lynn because he gave up 120 points in the fourth quarter. This year they gave up 179. When I was in Cleveland with Bill Belichick, and Nick Saban as our defensive coordinator, the entire season we gave up 204 points.
My God. That's crazy. And it's just like, how do you not get into the playoffs when you have Justin Herbert healthy for every game? You got more than you got like 80% of the league looking for an elite quarterback.
I'll tell you, I'll answer your question. If this is Jeopardy, the answer is your 32nd and third down defense. The answer is your 29th in points allowed. That's how.
Off of any just what's going on now, hanging out with Belichick and Nick Saban, I'm wondering, and just thinking about this as Belichick's getting ready to go back to the playoffs and Saban was in the national championship, I don't know if there's, and this is a tough question because I'm sure there's 1,000, but is there any story that sort of sticks out for you hanging out with like just those two people that have been, they've been in our football lives for decades?
Yeah, you know, I didn't hang out. I kind of worked with them. So it's kind of a different, you know, it's a different setting. But
yeah,
they're different. They're very different in terms of their personalities, in terms of their philosophical nature of how defense should be played. But they're very similar in how they get there. And they're both really good listeners. And they both kind of take what the other says and blends it into what they want to do. It's a really powerful, when you round them and they're talking football, coaching football, it's a powerful conversation.
As we end this, producer Austin, if you got any music to play lightly in the background, I was wondering, Mike, if you could just tell everyone where they can find you, where they can see you. We're fans of VSiN. We have Sean King on the show all the time. But where can people find your great work?
VSiN every day from 12 to 2, Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 12. My podcast is called The GM Shuffle. That's available every Monday and Thursday. And then on Twitter, M. Lombardi NFL on Twitter. I'm all over the place.
Mike,
I have too many jobs. I need to get rid of a few.
You really do. Exactly. But man, it's fun, and you'll get a break. But no, then there's the off season. Then there's the draft. You'll get 2 weeks off sometime in June. But Mike, I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care. That is Mike Lombardi, former general manager, and again, 3-time Super Bowl winning NFL executive. Every time we got to have like a Bon Jovi, we got to have a Bruce Springsteen, or just get the Sopranos. Just get the Austin. We just got to get the Sopranos opening theme.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Listen, there was a miscommunication on the phone. No one asked anyone to work for. I've just got the truck after me that both of you dropped on me, so I'm feeling okay.
You doing okay over there?
I'll live.
Is it the backup studio? Is that
the backup studio makes everything harder, Matt? Thank you for acknowledging that.
Yes. Yeah. No, listen, I'm a big believer in the theme of degree of difficulty. It's why Roy Halladay should be celebrated more and should have won more than one Cy Young while pitching in the AL East against $200 million payrolls. And you, sir, are the Roy Halladay of sports afternoon radio producers.
I like this. That's more of an AJ Burnett. I'm not sure I'm the ace, but thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. Sure.
On the other side, it is a bilingual sound of the day. That's coming up in a moment. But first, time now for News Talk 1010 traffic update.
This is Gameplay on TSN 1050.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Now, while it certainly doesn't equal the return of Klay Thompson, but Geno Malkin is making his return for the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight as they are in Anaheim. And the Penguins were a team, you know, the last bunch of years, decent, sometimes good regular seasons, but then losing in the first round. When December started, they lost 5-2 to Edmonton. And on that day, Edmonton was the clear favorite of any Canadian team that was going to make the playoffs. They were like, you know, 16-5-0 or something like that. Then there's the Penguins, 10-8-5 after losing 5-2 to Edmonton. Since then, they are now 29-5. They've gone 10-1. They lost their last game 3-2 on Saturday to Dallas. And now Malkin is back in the lineup. I feel, keep an eye on this. This will have certainly some gambling implications in terms of over-unders. And it just breathes more life into a team that you weren't sure which way they were going to go this year. And they look really, really strong. Good on them. And once again, it's Crosby and eventually Malkin and Letang and Rust and a lot of the names that you know. All right, we do this at the end of each and every show. It is time now for Sound of the Day.
Sound of the Day, Sound of the Day. Here comes the Sound of the Day.
Let's do this not in one, not in two, but three languages. The interception return touchdown that just was the final. I'm trying to think of the right cliche to use.
The
nail on the coffin, the icing on the cake, the cherry on the sundae, whatever one you want to use. Georgia beats Alabama 33-18 in the national championship game. Let's start with the Georgia call. Here is Keely Ringo and his pick six.
And then they reverse it with Billingsley back to the right. Snap to Young. Drops back. Pressure from the edges. He throws near sideline. And it's intercepted. Intercepted. Keely Ringo at the 21. Off he goes. 40, 50, 45, 40, 35, 30. Near sideline. Breaks the tackle. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. 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 Georgia. 54 seconds to go. Keely Ringo with about a 75-yard return. No flags. 32-18. Let the celebration begin.
Now let's go to the Spanish call of that same play.
Cambiando estaba Billingsley. Yo. Y a ver hasta dónde lo puede devolver. Es Kelly Ringo. Sigue Ringo. Corta adentro. Ringo. Touchdown, Georgia.
And finally, the rarely heard but often enjoyed Russian call.
10. 5 секунд на розыгрыш. Бразьян. Еще бросок далекий. Перехват, который, если не будет нарушения правил, ставит точку в этом финале. Падай, падай, падай. Куда ты бежишь? Падай. Куда ты бежишь?
В эндзону убежал человек. А человек хорош.
So congratulations to Georgia. All right, real quick, let's go over the two big games tonight. We'll go by what time they're on. Phoenix Suns are traveling to Toronto. I like the Phoenix Suns. I'll take them at -4, and you got to bet -110 on that, so you got to bet 110 to win $100. I'll take the Suns at -4, and the reason there, Phoenix 4-2 against the spread in their last 6, 14-2 against the spread in the last 16 against Toronto. Also, even though they lost their last game, they're getting fully healthy, and guys like Ayton and Crowder and JaVale McGee, kind of a rusty first game back after the COVID health and safety protocol. But that's going to be a really healthy team. And for Toronto, this is a different step up in competition. I take Phoenix. Not going to be a blowout, but I'll take the 4. I'll take the over of 223. What you got there, Austin?
Oh, I like your reasoning there. I hope Toronto wins, but if I had to bet, I'd bet on Phoenix as well. And I'm going with the under. I have it at 223 here as well. I'm going to take the under. I think it's a low-scoring game, defensive battle between both teams, and that, I think, will favor the Suns.
Total's gone over a 9 of Phoenix's last 13 and 10 of the last 11 for Toronto, but again, all streaks must come to an end. The Maple Leafs and the Golden Knights, I got Toronto winning. I'll take the -125. I'm going to take the under of 6 goals. And you can get plus like 300 or even higher for an anytime goal for Andre Kasha. What do you like tonight in that game?
Oh, I'm with you on both of those. I got the Leafs at 105. And Austin Matthews, as Josh Inglis said, anytime goal score plus 700. Take that to the bank.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, sorry, the Kasha one, that odds must have been way, way higher, but like in the plus thousands. But
I think it was plus.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we are in agreement on the Leafs. We're in agreement on the Phoenix Suns. We're in agreement on the under for Leafs. But I got the over for Suns Raps. You got the under.
Yes,
we will find out tomorrow. It is going to be a packed show. Have a great night. Everyone be good, be safe, be warm. Enjoy tonight's action. Overdrive is next. But first, traffic.